The big Harley purring between his spread legs, Brian braked to a halt behind a thick brick wall and thumbed the transmit on the handcom.
Okay, I got the machine guns with the pipe bombs. Now light her up.
Bet your ass we will. Roger that.
Tucking the comm into a pocket, Ryan fed the twin V-88 some fuel and rode down the block, arching around the tank to a new position. A few seconds later, the exact spot he had just transmitted from loudly detonated. Yeah, he had expected that would be the reaction to a radio broadcast this close. Once Gazza figured it wasn't muties running about, he would be forced to use the big gun, which slowed his departure and bought the traitor more time. But the bastard cannon was fast. Wouldn't have thought something that large could move so bastard quick. And Ryan had faced such a Titan before. The damn military wag was a GE Ranger, a comp-operated tank, very similar to one they had fought back in Ohio. It had taken a suicide run to stop that war machine, and he sure as nuking hell hoped it wouldn't require such a sacrifice again here in Texas. Suddenly, a flame flickered from a second story, and a burning object arced through the drizzling sky to hit behind the tank, forming a pool of fire. As the main gun swung that way, Roberto drove the Harley down a flight of stairs and deeper into the ruins. The tank hummed, and that area exploded. JB then popped up on the other side and threw another Molotov that landed on top of the Ranger, and Brian added a third in front of the machine. As they raced away, Roberto tossed in a fourth, sealing the war wag in a ring of flame. Steering with one hand through the scattered rain, Brian pulled out the hand comp and hit the switch.
Okay, she's hot as an oven. Do it now!
I was afraid of this. We're too damn far. The traitor can't hear us.
Ryan glanced at the buildings rising in the center of the city.
They sure as hell can't see us, that's for damn sure. Got no choice. One of us goes back.
On it!
Roberto roared off, shouting into the handcom. The tank fired at the deserting man as he took a corner, and an entire side of a bank blew out, masonry tumbling into the puddle-filled street, crushing cars and trucks.
We have to keep it busy.
Ryan paused to take a pothole, the impact jarring his spine and kidneys hard.
Keep talking and moving. It'll track on us and ignore Roberto.
You mean you hope it will? Sure as hell wish we could use the law rockets, but they wouldn't dent this monster.
Rolling out of the pool of flames, the tank hummed again. Ryan and JB's radios crackled from the electromagnetic impulse of the coil gun cannon.
Fire blast, it moved! Any more Molotovs?
No!
Then we use the satchel charge.
Too late!
Glancing upward, Ryan cursed as he saw the fiery outline of the heatseekers from Warwag 1 arc over the city and plummet straight down toward the empty pool of fire. Then a pair peeled off to separate and strike different buildings still blazing. But the rest dove toward their target and impacted on the vacant street.
We were too slow! Okay, we use the backup plan.
Killing their radios, Ryan and JB rode to new locations and parked in the penumbra of jagged structures that hopefully would hide them from the sensors of the Ranger. Stepping off the bikes, the men unlimbered their law rockets, pulled the pins, and extended the tubes to swing the launchers toward the tallest remaining skyscraper. In a whooshing roar, the rockets launched and climbed on hot contrails to slam deep into the structure. Even as the shiny plastic fell, there was a brilliant strobe of light from the cliff as the L-gun of Warwag 1 stabbed out a short, shimmering beam of destruction that hit the building and cut it in two, finishing the job the rockets merely started. As the slab of floors fell away, the Warwag now had a direct line-of-sight view of the Ranger. Even as the tank swung its main gun toward the enemy on the high ground, the homemade laser stabbed out with a sustained beam of shimmering energy that glanced straight through the machine like a burning sword. As the chassis glowed red hot, the coil gun hummed one last time as the Ranger flashed rads from the violated DU armor, flooding the vicinity to lethal levels. The hatch on top of the tank came open, and then everything flammable in the tank vaporized into superheated steam. Tumbling in the air, the tank crashed back down as a flaming meteor, secondary explosions cooking nuke batteries and adding to the general annihilation. Then, incredibly, the electric motors roared with life, and the Ranger tried to rally once more, until lightning crackled from the engine compartment and the fusion reactor scrammed, shutting off all power. Crackling in flames, the demolished Warwag sat there for a few calculated seconds, just long enough to draw an enemy closer, and then the self-destruct charges welded inside its sturdy frame detonated. As the hellish inferno slowly dimmed and vision returned, there was nothing remaining of the Predark tank but a steaming crater in the ground, and a very great deal of molten steel scattered about, sizzling on the damp ground. Ryan's handcom crackled to life.
Hello? Anybody there?
I'm okay, Roberto. How about you, JB?
Alive and kicking.
Looking to the cliff, Ryan frowned when he couldn't find the Warwag.
How is Trader? Did they take a hit?
She's aced. Everybody else got out in time, in case the attack failed. But she stayed to aim the laser.
The Trader is chilled.
Ryan raised a gloved hand to shield his face from the raging inferno of the dying tank. Predark lampposts on the distant corners were starting to soften and bend over from the heat, like melting icicles, the sidewalks shattering into rubble, bricks crumbling into the ash they were forged from.
No way she could have escaped? None. Gordon saw it happen from Warwag 2, which I guess is now 1, and I'm the new traitor. Which means you Outlanders aren't welcome here anymore.
As morning came, words were few and the mood was solemn as the people picked through the steaming wreckage of the destroyed Warwag to find anything they could salvage. It would be a very long drive to the closest depot and their next cache of supplies. The decision had already been made in the morning light to accept a deal from an Ohio trader who needed help reclaiming a huge Warwag from the side of a mountain. How it got there, nobody could say, but it was packed with weapons and in prime condition. With their share, they should be back in business again, and there would be some trading along the way. Some chilling, too, most likely, but then, that was life. Jack strapped the water can to the side of the motorcycle. The air was clean this morning, the stink of the acid long gone with the sun, leaving the desert feeling clean and renewed.
Dead everything?
Everything I can think of taking.
Ryan checked the hoses on the big Harley. The hog needed a good cleaning, but aside from that, it was fit for travel. Whoever the recent owners were, they had taken excellent care of the bikes.
Nice of the trader to let us have these.
Dean wiped off the sweat with a damp rag. The saddlebags were full of food and water, and even a few of the pipe bombs. They would be able to reach the redoubt on the Grandee without any real problems.
Nothing courteous about it. The bikes let us leave faster. I guess he must have loved her a lot. Maybe too much. Damn fool should have said something while she was still around. Love oft ties the tongue, as steel can bind a hand.
Spread before the companions, the Texas desert was flattened into a mosaic pattern of raindrop hits, the landscape even more barren and desolate than before.
Looks like the surface of the moon.
Mildred hefted her med kit. She had shared what she could of the recent acquisitions from the city with Matilda, who was now the healer for the convoy. It left them both short on supplies, but each came away with a few items they didn't have before. A fair exchange. Jack topped off the oil in his machine.
How know what moon looked like?
I saw it on TV once.
Vid?
No, a live broadcast back in the 70s.
Doesn't matter. We're all here and still breathing. I guess that Doomy was wrong, eh?
Christy gave JB a grin, but didn't comment in return. The scrawled message had only said what would happen, not when. She still felt the hand of death among them, and knew it would strike soon. Perhaps not today or tomorrow, but soon. Several techs and secmen for the convoy were inspecting a tire on the small cargo van, Roberto among them. So Ryan took the chance to walk over to the man who now called himself Traitor. The name was being passed around a lot these days, but these two, so far, had been worthy of the title.
We'll be leaving now, heading south to the Grandee.
The one-eyed man wanted to say more, but knew it wouldn't be accepted well.
Fine.
With a shrug, Ryan turned, but the man stopped him.
Hellfire. Look, I'm not going to consider your group to be our enemies, Outlander. So if we cross paths again someday, there won't be a bounty on your heads. Might even be welcome, if enough time has passed.
Ryan said nothing, merely nodding, knowing this speech wasn't for him, but for the man giving it. A way to say things he couldn't say in private. Nothing special about it. Wounds needed to bleed before they could heal, was all.
But right now, I can't stand the fragging sight of you. I can't forgive you for what happened to Kate, and I'll always think you were responsible for it. So go while you can, and I do mean now.
Ryan nodded in understanding.
Guess I'd feel about the same if my woman got aced.
Holding open the door to the war wag, Jake offered a hand to Jessica, and the woman smiled as she climbed inside. The hatch closed, sealing it tight.
Some folks feel that time heals all wounds. I wish them good luck.
Amen. Farewell and adieu.
Black smoke streamed up from the big diesels, then turned gray, and the armored transport started moving away. Watching the two battered wags roll for the horizon, Ryan wished Roberto luck.
Pity you can't ace folks twice. If anybody deserved a hard death, it was Gaza. He went far too quickly for my taste.
Doc Tanner tucked his ebony stick into a saddlebag, where he could easily reach it in case of trouble.
But you can, as many times as you wish, my friend. I remember in detail the deaths of Court Strasser and Silas every night before I sleep. Very soothing indeed.
It's not healthy to always dwell in the past.
Ah, but dear lady, it is always the past.
Doc climbed onto his bike.
There is no other time than the eternal memory of now.
Starting his battered motorcycle, Ryan led the others southward toward the closest known redoubt. Stumbling along through the desert, Baron Gaza ached in agony and thirst. Miraculously, he had been thrown clear of his beloved tank as he scrambled out, before it was destroyed by the accursed traitor, but at a huge cost. Most of his body was badly burned, he had lost his final wife in the explosion, and his arsenal was forever denied to him. It had taken most of his strength just to climb out of the buried city into the wasteland he was currently banished to. How could it have all gone so wrong for him in so short a time? Only a few days ago, he was the master of all the Deathlands, with his super tank and all of the treasures of the remaining pre-dark city. And now nothing. Not even a drink to quench his dehydration. Suddenly, the former Baron tripped on something and went flying, face to the ground. Slowly standing, he saw that it was a leather bag of some kind. He checked the contents, and the former Baron was delighted to find it full of water. Clear, clean water. A godsend. Drinking deeply from the tip of the bag, he felt giddy with excitement at the find. But then, he soon became drunkenly silly, and he clumsily missed his own mouth, the tainted water stinging as it washed into his eyes. Cursing, Gaza dropped the bag and slumped to the ground, moaning in pain, then was soon wailing in hysteria as the Jinkaja poison flooded his body. Lost in his world of madness, the man never saw the Corps members rise up from the damp sands to reclaim the bag and leave again, abandoning the invader to the brutal mercies of the desert.